Welcome to Ideas and Issues. I'm Hewlett Follett, professor of philosophy at East Tennessee State University. My guest today is Peter Watson, attorney for the parents of the children killed in Dunblane, and we're going to be discussing gun control. Glad to have you with us, Peter.
Good to be with you.
There has going on right now a heated debate about gun control in this country. Could you briefly tell the listener about the status of that debate?
Okay, well, at the moment, we've had the government inquiry into what happened in Dunblane, conducted by Lord Cullen, one of our High Court judges. And Parliament have now considered that report, and there are proposals by the government which are far-reaching to change what were at one time considered pretty tough gun laws into even tougher ones, which will result in most handguns being banned. The big debate is how far that goes. The families and indeed many people in the country want a ban completely on all handguns. The government proposal falls short of that in that it's going to allow .22 weapons to remain in private hands, although only within locked gun clubs. And that's where we're at the moment.
Okay. You mentioned Dunblane. I'm sure most of the listeners remember, but perhaps you need to remind us of the details of what happened last March.
Well, on the 13th of March 1996, we had perhaps one of the worst events imaginable to any country in the world, any human being, in that a man called Thomas Hamilton, who was a licensed gun holder and someone permitted to own and hold weapons at home, entered a primary school in the morning and went into a gymnasium where a group of five-year-old children were preparing with their teachers to take part in keep fit classes. He shot dead and killed 16 babies, kids of 5 years of age, killed one of the teachers and wounded 12 other children and two of the teachers. And perhaps worst of all, if you can even imagine anything being worse, is that this was not just random firing. Having injured some of the kids, he then went back and executed them. It was the worst imaginable thing that anyone could imagine.
Okay. And as I understand it, too, there's evidence to believe he actually intended to kill every child in the school.
He took in enough guns and ammunition and indeed had planned this in such a way that he had obtained information as to where the school assembly took place. That's the point where all the kids gather every morning. And he went there first looking for them. But fortunately, the assembly had finished and kids had gone back to their programmed events for the morning. And so having not found the assembly with all the children and all the teachers, he then moved on and found the gymnasium with this group of five-year-olds.
Okay. And your role specifically is what?
Well, I was retained by the families once the government announced that they were going to hold an inquiry. And they wanted to take part in that inquiry directly and to find out all they could about the circumstances which led up to someone like Hamilton having a gun license and events like this being able to happen. And also put forward proposals to ensure that it could never happen again. And that's been my role.
Okay. This event, had it happened anywhere, would be shocking. It did seem to be especially shocking happening in Scotland, in a small town in Scotland. Shocking because it was, because Britain does have relatively strict gun laws. Shocking because Scotland, perhaps more than other parts of the country, is known as being a non-violent area. I take it somehow that shapes your sense about what needs to be done. Is that right?
Yes. If it can happen here, in a rural community surrounded by cows and sheep, almost idyllic community, I'm sure, looked at from abroad, of sloping hills and church steeples, and small village communities with a strong sense of community and people who care about each other on an everyday basis. with none of the problems of inner cities, no drugs problems, no crime problems, no mugging problems, quite the opposite, the antithesis of all of that. If it can happen here in such a community, then no one and no child is safe anywhere.
Okay. You support the parents' position for a complete ban on handguns. In the United States, at least, to recommend such a ban would be, certainly to many people, treasonous. There's sort of standard arguments that people give why they think some sort of strong control of handguns is inappropriate. The reasons seem to be three. Let me briefly summarize them and go back and talk about each of those. Many people say, well, let's simply have some sort of system of control for guns. That's all we need. If we have controls, that'll solve the problem because crimes like this are caused by criminals, not by law-abiding citizens. Sometimes the second argument that's used, sometimes people say, well, it's people who commit crimes, not guns, so why try to stop the guns? Why try to control the guns? And the third is that there are legitimate, sometimes people say there are legitimate sporting and recreational uses of guns, and any law that tried to ban guns would eliminate those perfectly legitimate uses. Now let's look at each of those. Let me just say too, I find it very difficult to talk about this in a serious way given the solemnity of what happened there, but I think it's important to do it. What do you say to someone who says, well look, let's just have more finely tuned laws to control ownership of guns. That'll solve the problem. What do you say to someone who takes that position?
Well, we had such finely tuned laws which are much more severe in their controls than anything that the United States could even imagine, and Dunblane happened. And before Dunblane we had Hungerford, which was a similar type of mass killing in a town in England. And the difficulty with laws is the rationale that underlines any accident or disaster. They are never one cause. Lockerbie, for example, the air disaster, was not caused simply because somebody put a bomb on a plane. That happened because of a series of steps preceding that, a series of human judgments, a series of human errors, and only when all of those were in place did it become possible for the bomb to get on Pan Am 103. Similarly, Dunblane didn't happen because Thomas Hamilton was a nutcase who had a gun. It didn't happen because he had an unusual and unhealthy interest in children. It didn't happen because he was a loner. It didn't happen because he was becoming ostracized in his society. It didn't happen because of a whole number of reasons. All of those were in the pot, and like pieces of the jigsaw clicked together. And when in that awful moment all of these circumstances were linked one to the other, it exposed a fatal flaw. The flaw is that our legislation depends, like all legislation, on human judgments. Some of those were mistaken, some of those may have been negligent. But what it did do was permit a set of circumstances whereby Thomas Hamilton was able to own a gun and to enter a school. Now, all the controls that you can imagine would not have stopped that, because human judgments failed, and there is no set of circumstances imaginable where you can eliminate those. And moving on in part to other parts of your question, one would say immediately that, you know, handguns are designed to kill, and that's their primary function. And when you permit that instrument of death to be held by an individual, and the control of that individual to be determined by human judgments, then you admit a percentage error.
Okay, so the first part of your point is, yes, he was a loner, yes, he was ostracized from his community, yes, he did have an unusual interest in children, yes, he did have an unusual interest in guns, but all those things could have been true But had he not been allowed to have the guns, then it wouldn't have happened. And the reason he was allowed, in fact, maybe it's a point to talk about. I mean, he did legally own these guns, correct?
Yes, lawfully held the weapons and lawfully held the ammunition.
Okay, maybe that would help a bit. What roughly are the regulations currently concerning ownership of guns and ammunition?
Well, you apply for a license. Handguns are section known as a Section 1 weapon under the Firearms Act of 1968. The police are supposed to check. Largely that means determining you don't have a criminal record. And as we heard at the inquiry, if that check showed that there was no record for the police authority involved, then your license will be approved. You pay a small fee and you can own a handgun.
Okay, so it's mainly if you've never committed a crime before?
Yes.
Okay.
And then it shouldn't be as restrictive of that, but that's the way in which it was interpreted by the police force in question and by many others.
Oh, okay. So there at least are some people who thought that there were more stringent controls.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Could you say a little bit more about this, your response to the view that it's people and not guns that, that commit murders?
It's very simple. You could apply today for a handgun license, and you'd be interviewed by a police officer who'd say, well, you're sane, you're sensible, you're a member of the community, you're an American working in a university here, you seem to be, you live in a stable family life, he doesn't see anything wrong with you, and you would be approved.
Okay.
Now, what happens is in 3 months' time, 6 months' time, some point in the future, you perhaps have been diagnosed with some horrible disease. You become depressed, you start receiving medication which may alter your state of mind. Perhaps your marriage breaks down, perhaps you're about to lose your job in reorganization, you become depressed as you see your inability to support your family and pay your debts, and suddenly you've gone through a major personality change with huge psychiatric problems either there or potentially there. You're the same person holding a gun that 3 months or 6 months ago was a sane, sensible, stable member of the community. There is no way that we know that that person has changed and has become someone for whom we should have real worries and concerns. And there is no way that that can ever be predicted. We, in the inquiry, interviewed the top psychiatrists and forensic psychiatrists in the country, who all agreed on one point: there is no way to predict mental illness. One thing is certain, that 70% of the population at one stage or another will suffer some form of mental illness, even if it's a mild depression. Should a depressed person hold a handgun? Should a depressed person have the right of life and death?
Because of that. Okay. Let's pause briefly for the benefit of anyone who may be tuning in late. This is Ideas and Issues. My guest today is Peter Watson, who is the attorney for the parents of the children killed in Dunblane last March, and we're discussing gun control. The argument he just gave, then, is that no matter how rigorous a system is, any system which permits someone to hold a handgun, even if at the time the person is wholly sane and law-abiding, the likelihood is, or at least the possibility is, that that person will undergo changes at some point in their life. They might then be inclined to do something like Thomas Hamilton did. They might be inclined to commit a murder, if not of a whole series of school children, of one other person. And by having the gun, it's easier to commit that crime.
Yes.
Is that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, I can make it more focused for your listeners just now. I mean, we're witnessing the awful events in St. Petersburg in Florida at the moment, where someone was shot by a police officer in an incident involving a car. Well, whatever the rights and wrongs of that, and I don't know anything about it, all I can say is if the policeman didn't have a gun, he couldn't have shot the person. Now, it's a crude way of putting it, but the point is the same. Whilst an individual has a gun, there are a myriad of reasons why that person should at one point or another not have a gun. Being ill, being depressed, being stressed out, being drunk, being on drugs, human beings are capable of a thousand and one conditions, human conditions. One thing is certain, if they have a gun, then there is the possibility it can be used. If they don't, then it's not there to be used.
And being more lethal than other forms of weapons.
It's 30 times more certain to bring a fatal end to a situation than any other weapon available.
Elaborate on that, please.
We commissioned research from Professor Gabor at Ottawa University, leading forensic psychologist with an interest in firearms, and he reviewed the world literature on firearms. Not just criminal activities, but accidental homicides, gun accidents at home, and what have you. And the statistics are there. The gun ownership is one quarter in Canada of what it is in the United States. Accidental deaths and shootings in Canada are precisely one quarter of what they are in the United States. The more guns, the greater the number of incidents which will happen, whether accidental or deliberate. You don't have a drive-by shooting without a gun. You can rob a store with a knife just as well as you can with a gun. But the statistics are clear. The number of fatal conclusions to such robberies rise exponentially with the use of guns. You can have a domestic argument at home, but when a gun is introduced, a fatal result is almost certain. When some other weapon is used, there is room for intervention.
Okay, so you don't, I mean, the idea of a misfired, a mistakenly fired knife doesn't make any sense. Mistakenly fired gun does. Well, now, what somebody would say, though, in the United States, that claim is, well, it's true, you don't have drive-by shootings, but there's no way to get the guns out of the hands of the criminals. All you're going to do is take the hands out of the guns of the law-abiding citizens. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, there are a series of responses to that. First of all, you have to look at the society you want. Is the gun to be part of the society you live in? Is it something like drugs that you either want or you don't want? If you don't want, then in a philosophical, moral point of view, then it's quite clear, then you shouldn't have them. And there is a difference between lawfully held weapons and illegally held weapons, because for a number of reasons, lawfully held weapons are an acknowledgement by society that guns are all right. It breeds an acceptance of guns. It breeds an attitude towards guns by people which regard them as part and parcel of society, an acceptable part of the way we live. That is an acceptance that there'll be a certain number of deaths and a certain number of accidents, and we'll just have to live with it. I think for most people in Britain, that's something we're not prepared to accept. There's also direct evidence from almost every part of the civilized world that the more lawful guns you have, the greater the crossover into illegal weapons, because the more guns you hold, the more guns there are that can be that will be stolen, that will be sold on, that will be acquired illegally. So I think there is a direct correlation, and it's a self-defeating argument to say, well, because the criminal has guns, we should have guns, because what you do is create a guns culture, a vicious circle where the criminal goes out tooled up with his gun because he anticipates he'll meet a gun. So I think, a basic question which you have to ask and have to address. The more guns you have in society, the more homicides and accidents you will have.
Okay, so there are really two points there, independent of each other but related. One is that the way the criminal often gets their gun is from someone who first held it legally. And if the person didn't hold it legally in the first place, the criminal wouldn't have it to use. And second, I think perhaps maybe very important is by having legal guns, you're saying it sort of sets an attitude, a statement of the culture about the legitimacy of the use of guns and the acceptance of guns. Is that?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Well, now, on that end, certainly the third point that people sometimes make is, well, okay, it's true that some people have accidents with guns. It's true that some people sometimes use them in crimes, even legally held guns. But again, in the States, what people say is we have a right to have a gun because there are certain legitimate uses of guns, and the state should not take those away. The legitimate uses perhaps being sporting purposes, hunting, target shooting, etc. What do you say to someone who takes that position?
Okay, first of all, you don't hunt with a handgun. They're not designed to hunt with. They are weapons designed to kill people with, and they can be differentiated from a hunting rifle, for example, where people living in the country are involved in sporting activities and blood sports and what have you, can justify the use of rifles. They don't, in my view, pose anything like the risk of handguns, and I don't think there's any argument in that. Secondly, yes, I understand that people do participate in the sport of target shooting, and what they are effectively doing is using a handgun, which is designed, its primary design function is to kill human beings for a subsidiary purpose of shooting at a piece of paper, a target. Now, if you accept that to allow that brings with it a cost, and I mean it's a classic cost-benefit analysis that everything that we do, you smoke a cigarette, you take a risk. You drive cars that pollute, we take a risk. And society knows, for example, that cars kill people and pollute the environment. We know that cars are part of the way we live and our economy functions, and we pass laws about pollution and making them cleaner. We pass laws about the speed that cars drive and try to make them safer in order to cut down risks. And we try and balance the equation for society. Let's look at the equation for handguns. It's a minority sport that some people follow, target shooting. A consequence of that means accepting as a risk that some of those people who pursue that sport will misuse their firearms, either by accident or deliberately. That guns which they hold will be stolen and will pass into the criminal community. That inevitably flowing from those guns in society will be deaths, either deliberate or accidental, injuries, deliberate or accidental. The greatest cause of homicide for teenagers in the United States is handguns. Now, the question is that a cost worth paying for that benefit for that minority? Or is it something that we say as a society, no? People say, well, I may use cocaine as a recreational drug. And do we say as a society, we're going to permit that or not? If I decide, for example, bomb making is my sport, and I like to make grenades and throw them into a field, is that acceptable? I mean, these are questions, moral questions, which lie at the heart and foundations of a society. We're in a different position in Britain in that we don't have a constitution which says there is a right to have a firearm. Or to bear arms. In Britain it's not a right, it's a privilege. And the question that we say is, should we extend that privilege with the costs that come with it? I think the answer is an obvious one, because 16 dead five-year-olds is not a price worth paying. And it's wrong to say, oh well, that's the act of madman, it's isolated. Well, he may or may not have been mad. We had Hungerford before it. We've seen what happened in Australia. You've had shooting incidents in the United States, endless shooting incidents in the United States. They are happening. When I spoke in Boston recently, the very morning that I spoke to the ATLA conference, I read in the New York Times of an incident where a boy had used his gun, father's gun, playing around with it. It had gone off, and he had shot his sister, who was pregnant, and the fetus was lost. An example of the cost of having a gun at home. Is it worth paying?
Okay. Do you have any sense of what's going to happen in Britain?
Well, I have the sense that we're going to have the most fundamental gun reform ever. Whether it will go as far as the parents want, I don't know. But we're going to end up, even as the government proposes at the moment, with some of the most radical gun laws outside Japan that can be found anywhere in the world, which will simply say that 200,000 people who have handguns at home at present in Britain will not have them. And that must make it a safer society.
Okay. Now, when we were talking before the show, you mentioned that you have substantial contacts with attorneys in the United States. Could you speculate on how this might change, how the events in Britain might change or alter in any way the discussion of handgun control in the U.S.?
Well, it was very interesting when I went to Boston to speak at the Association of Trial Lawyers of America's convention. I left Great Britain with many people thinking it was somewhat akin to trying to sell sand to the Saudis, and that I would be met with complete derision and by people shaking their fists and claiming the right to bear arms. And of course I wasn't met with that at all. I met attorneys of every part of the United States who were articulate and who understood all of the arguments about gun control, and who basically expressed a wish that they were in the same position Britain was in, and that effectively they saw America as having lost the battle, and saw themselves almost in a position where in many places the police had lost the ability to control crime, and that the individuals effectively held handguns because there was no other way to police violent cities. My hope for America, which is a country which I and my family love and visit many times, is that gun control comes. It will come, I think, more slowly than it will come in Britain. I would hope, because of the relationship we have with the United States, that if our gun control is seen to work and our homicides drop and our injuries drop and our society seem to be better, that the United States will find encouragement in that, and that perhaps on a state-by-state basis or a community-by-community basis, something can be done to remove the evil of guns in the United States.
I think you could just sort of sum up very quickly in about 30, 45 seconds what you see as the choice that sits before all of us as civilized people.
Well, the choice is the decline into the abyss where we live waiting to be victims, and I believe that's the position for many people in the United States, or to regain the moral ground and simply say it is not acceptable for any individual to have the right of life and death in their own hands.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us, Peter.
Thank you.
I've been talking today with Peter Watson, attorney for the parents of the children killed in Dunblane, and we've been discussing gun control. This is Hugh LaFollette for Ideas and Issues. Good day.